Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, February 12th. I'm Ray Graff. Fasten your seatbelts. Get ready for a thrill ride. It's time for the copyright forum. I can feel the adrenaline flowing now. Joining us to answer your questions about protecting your writing, music, and art, Paul Rapp, Polly Law, and Bill Westwood. So if you have a question about intellectual property, copyright law, fair use, what's in the public domain, call us now, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can also email voxpop@wamc.org, but the number again is 800-348-2551. Paul, Polly, Bill, and your copyright calls coming up after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's the Copyright Forum today, and we have reassembled the dream team to answer your questions. A former member of the Now Tones, Paul Rapp, is an intellectual property lawyer and writer. He represents musicians, writers, fine artists, and businesses involved in the creative economy. He's a frequent lecturer on intellectual property. Bill Westwood is one of the country's leading medical illustrators and a professional member and past president of the Association of Medical Illustrators. Polly Law is past president of the Graphic Artists Guild, an organization focused on the rights of artists. She is a designer, illustrator, and artist whose works are in numerous private collections, represented by galleries in Rhinebeck, New York, and Provincetown in Nantucket, Massachusetts. If you have a question, now's the time. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551 or email voxpop@wamc.org. Hello, gang.
Hello. Hey.
Polly, you have things going on. Let's talk about that right now.
Yes, I have a show currently up. Last summer, two artist friends and I spent 2 weeks in the southwest coast of Scotland sketching our little hearts out and came home and made a whole lot of work. And
nice.
It is currently hanging at the Albert Shahinian Fine Art Gallery in Rhinebeck, New York, and it will be there until June. And in April, we will be doing an artist talk if you
Fantastic.
Wish to come at that time.
What's your favorite work that's there of yours? There?
Of mine?
Yeah. I know you love all your children.
No, I did. I did a silk. I have silk screen prints, and I have what are called papier collé pieces, paper cut. Collages. I did a silkscreen piece of the Giant's Causeway. We took a ferry over to Ireland to see the Giant's Causeway while we were there. And it's a tough thing to draw.
Yeah.
Because it is just so complex and at the same time rather boring.
Sounds like a great subject. I'm glad it turned out all right.
Yeah.
Bill Westwood, what's your favorite body part that you've drawn?
I don't think we want to go
all
there.
Right, sir?
What's the most fiscally rewarding?
They all are.
So what's new, man?
Parts is parts.
Anything good? Anything happening?
No, everything's just going along good.
Yeah.
You know, I can't complain.
I saw you in the store.
We
chatted amiably for a while, and then we moved on.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, isn't it sort of one of those uncomfortable things? You talk to somebody in the store, and then you sneak away and say, okay, so long, I got things to do.
And you bump into them in the next aisle.
Exactly. Yeah. No, it's you again. Jesus, I got to say something. All right, Paul Rapp, what's happening with you, my friend?
I had a really interesting case this month. It was a professional Mrs. Santa Claus.
What?
I had been threatened with a defamation lawsuit by a professional Santa Claus.
I'm sorry?
Yeah.
What?
And so she contacted me, and I said, well, you called the right lawyer because I'm an expert in Santa Claus law. And
what the heck?
There was an article about the apparently systemic harassment of Mrs. Santa Clauses. By Santa Claus.
Mercy.
They tend to hog the spotlight. They windmill. If there's a picture taken, they'll always try to obscure the Mrs. Santa Claus.
I mean, in fairness, most people are going to see Santa, right? Mrs. Claus
is
making cocoa and such.
Well, but, you know, a number of Mrs. Santa Clauses around the country were complaining about their treatment by Santa Claus. And, and you know, my client said something, and this guy objected. And
interesting.
Misogyny exists everywhere.
Yeah.
And don't get me started on those elves. All right, so you guys did show prep for me, Paul Rapp. Not only did he not make me scared that he wasn't going to show up, he actually sent an article. And I know, Bill, you have some stuff, too. So why don't you guys just give us a quick précis on what we're talking about here, and then we'll hit the phones.
Go, Paul.
Don't all jump at once.
Yeah, the article I sent you was a Wired magazine. They are now tracing and tracking all of the AI-related lawsuits, including one we're about to talk about.
And there are many.
And there's like 40 of them.
It's incredible.
And the decisions are going to go every which way, I predict, and none of this is going to get resolved until it finally gets to the Supreme Court. And you know, and the likelihood of them getting it right is kind of between slim and none, and I'm not even sure anymore what right is. But
are there any districts that would be more, you know, that would lean one way or the other noticeably?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I mean, you wonder if they brought it in the Northern District of California, if. You know, because of the presence. But, you know, I think courts, you know, tend to be kind of immune to that kind of pressure. You know, and these issues aren't like Republican, Democrat,
right.
red state, blue
right.
state issues at all.
Plus, they're so new, they're so unique that I don't know. I think we may get a smattering of different mm-hmm. decisions
yeah.
from one district to the other.
Yeah, and so... I mean, that being said, I've got clients, you know, who are writers, you know, with major publishing houses, who are, you know, now concerned about the publishers letting AI companies use their works for training for money.
And they were
not passing the money along.
Probably not passing it on to the author, or if they do, they'll get their 12% or, you know, whatever. But they, you know, I've got clients that don't want it to happen. I'm not sure
how
exactly what they're afraid of.
You said there were 40, and I looked at this article, and it would strike me that a year from now, when we do this show, there'll be 4,000 of them. Right? 40 is very low, I would think.
But they consolidate. A lot of these cases are consolidated. There's like 60 that have been consolidated into 40, and they may even consolidate more because the issues are all basically the same in
right.
all of these. And then they got to get to the circuit courts, and then finally it'll get, you know, the Supreme Court will probably, everyone that's out there, they will consolidate. There'll be, you know, 500 briefs. And,
what specific case were we going to talk about here today?
Well, the one that I thought was the most interesting was the one that involved Legos.
And what?
Yeah.
The Lego company is being sued by a designer over a tiny black jacket that was worn by a figurine in a Queer Eye toy set released last year, which depicts the original Atlanta Loft featured in the hit Netflix show, which I was unfamiliar with. But this designer, whose clothes are often worn by Queer Eye star Antoni Porowski, filed a lawsuit against the Danish toy company Legos in a Connecticut district court. According to the complaint, Concannon, the designer, asserts that in 2018 he created a custom leather jacket with his signature propaganda-infused aesthetic for Porowski, having already had several of his designs appear on Queer Eye since 2017. This one apparently involved the design of a leather jacket that Legos folks did not pay for.
Aha!
But, you know, I don't really care, do you?
That's the guy, right?
Seconded.
No! Someone else makes that jacket.
Oh, okay.
So, you know.
Okay.
I was wondering because I saw the pictures of the jacket and it looked like it was the same idea. But
yes, it is the same idea.
Well, it's just interesting. It's there's so many. Hardly a week goes by that I don't see some other copyright lawsuit being filed.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Some of them seem to have a lot of merit. Some of them are sort of
the majority
spurious.
Are just
yeah, grasping like
the,
at straws.
The dog toy one with the
Jack Daniels.
With Jack Daniels is now kicking.
Settled, right?
Well, it was settled apparently in favor of Jack Daniels, but
the Supreme Court ruled in favor of Jack Daniels.
But now they're coming back with, and I meant to print it out. They're coming back with some other action to go at it again.
Maybe they'll go after Jim Beam next. All right.
As long as it's not Evan.
As long as it's not Evan Williams?
Williams.
All right. Now we know what store you and I were in. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's a copyright forum. Paul Rapp, Bill Westwood, and Polly Law are here. And then I'll tell you what. We have about 90 seconds before the break, and then we're going to hit the phones. There is another couple of stories here, but why don't you give me one more, and we'll bat it around for a minute.
Paul knows a lot about this. Warner Brothers is hit with a Superman copyright lawsuit ahead of a new movie about Superman.
Okay.
Yeah, Siegel and Shuster, who were the young cartoonists who, you know, came up with Superman.
In Action Comics all that time ago.
Yeah, Detective Comics, right? DC?
No, that was Batman. Action Comics was DC as well, but Superman was Action Comics.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think.
No, according to this, wasn't it, Paul? According to this, it was Detective?
Well, maybe Superman was in Detective Comics, but I know it was Action Comics in the old days.
And, you know, and they and their heirs have been suing Warner Brothers and everybody they can, and they haven't won anything yet. But according to this article, they're now suing under British law, which varies somewhat in terms of intestacy. And they think, and I don't. I read it and I didn't really understand what they were talking about.
What was that word? Testicles? What did you say?
Intestacy.
Intestacy. That sounds painful. What the heck is it?
You know, it's how rights succeed. You know, when somebody dies.
I see.
To their kids. So, but you know, they're back in the news trying again.
Good heavens! How many times have they sued?
They've been suing for decades.
Yeah,
literally
decades.
Crazy.
They've been shot down many times.
All right, I tell you what, let's take a quick break here. It's that time. It is the Copyright Forum. Polly Law, Bill Westwood, Paul Rapp are here. You're over there. Phones are starting to light up here. 800-348-2551. We'll be right back. Christian McBride, Big Band, Shade of the Cedar Tree here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551. Polly Law is here, and Bill Westwood and Paul Rapp. They're ready for your intellectual property calls. And let's start with a fellow who's been on hold for quite some time, Dave and Clarence. Dave, I showed everybody your picture. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Ray. Thank you very much.
All right, so set it up. Go ahead.
Williams is the hill I'll die on with you.
Yeah, you know, it's a value. You know what I mean? It's a value.
It's a value.
All right, so go ahead.
All right. I had about 300 T-shirts printed up, as you can see, maybe 13 years ago, is the small copyright down in the right-hand corner.
Okay.
And it's my take on I Love New York, but there's lots of things you can do in New York. You can go tenting, you can go fishing, you can go hiking, you can go kayaking. So I replaced the part with a graphic that expresses, let's say, some sports activity.
Fishing.
And fishing in this case, yeah. So I can fish New York. And shortly after my shirts were printed, New York State came out with their ad campaign where they actually turned that graphic into an illustrated motion tourism spot. And now, close to my house, there's
that specific graphic. That specific graphic, or just the Milton Glaser I Heart New York?
Your specific graphic is the question.
Something like that. Yes, it was
like
It's sort of a in the same mode. A red image.
Okay.
Of fish,
aha.
Let's say.
Okay.
And near our house now, we have a nature preserve that has a poster hanging on it that is I Bird New York. Hmm. And so I guess my question is generally, should I have done something different? besides the copyright watermark, let's say.
Did you register the copyright with the Copyright Office?
No, because I did not.
I think they would probably, we were discussing this before, I think there's a good chance they would have rejected it by not having you know, enough copyrightable material, which, because that's happened to me a bunch of times, and I don't agree with it, but it's the reality of the Copyright Office policy. So,
but he couldn't sue the state anyway, right?
No, because you're really kind of suing about an idea, and the idea of using the Milton Glaser I Heart New York graphic and altering it. And so, yeah, I don't see you really having a big case here.
Well, there's plus is a sovereign immunity issue.
Oh, yeah. Is that too?
Yeah,
that's what I thought. You can't sue the state, right?
Right.
Well, yeah.
Even if it was flat-out copyright infringement, you can't sue the state.
Interesting.
Unless the state says you can.
Okay. Well,
you know, and some states do. Some states allow.
But the state also could not sue him for altering it because the state can't own a copyright.
Okay. But he did it first, right?
I don't think so.
I think states...
Milton Glaser did the I Heart New York first.
Okay. States can. Feds can't.
Oh, okay. States can? Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. All right, Dave. Well, good luck. I'm sorry about that. You want to follow up at all?
Yeah, I've got about 150 left if you're interested.
Great. It was a great idea. It really is a great idea.
I don't know, man. Well, thanks a lot for the call. Hey, just had a thought, Westwood. Here's a great idea. You know how I Heart New York, right?
Yeah.
Anatomically correct heart in the next one. You know, you have I and then just a perfect drawing of a heart. New York. What do you think?
Why do I think there's probably one out there already?
I don't think so. No. I Heart New York.
With an anatomically correct Bill Westwood deluxe, all the ventricles in place and everything
else.
I
might be able to register that if I've got a good enough heart drawing.
If you got a good enough heart, and you can get together with Dave there. And,
there you go.
You know. I lose money on shirts. You know?
Okay, yeah, I want a cut of that loss. All right, let's go to Jack in Worthington. Jack, you're on.
Yeah, hi. I've got a question. I've got a patent on a medical device that I'm possibly selling the company. My patent was basically issued in 1998. So the first part of the question is that patent still valid?
No.
The second part is I have a registered trademark that's been in existence now about 5 years, going on 5 years. And I got a notice from an attorney that said, oh, it's time for renewal. So do I renew that? The third part of the question is, if I sell the company, do I have to sell the patent with it, or is that all part of the negotiation?
Well, first of all, the patent has expired. I think it's 17 or 18 years is what you've got on the patent. The patent I had on a product expired similarly. Paul could better address.
I did.
Yeah.
I just to bring it up, a couple of years ago, I did send in because I've updated this product to go with how the market was going as far as design was concerned. But I was told as an opinion to my patent attorney that it wasn't significant enough changes.
Right. Yeah.
But it was submitted. So, so that patent is probably legally it's expired.
Yeah, I would say so. I'm not a patent attorney, but you know, whether or not you could get something in, you might, you know, ask another patent attorney for an opinion as to whether or not whatever changes you suggested would warrant additional protection, but generally speaking, I'd say your patent is expired.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah. So if it's expired, it really doesn't matter other than the fact that I would like to maintain possession of the history.
Yeah. And your trademark is related to this invention, correct?
Yes. It's related. I was able to trademark part of the name.
Well, I would continue that because that there's going to be value in that if you've got market if you've got a market presence with your, you know, even though your device is now in the public domain, the brand name for it is probably something of value. And so I would, between the fifth and the sixth year, you have to do a maintenance filing with the Patent and Trademark Office to let them know you're still using it.
I mean, if he's thinking about selling the company, it might be worth it to go ahead and redo that.
Yeah. Increase the value of the sale.
Because, your value is going to be in the name.
Okay, Jack, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551. It's the copyright form. Polly, while we were on the last call, you've discovered that my idea is not so new after all.
No.
There is an I Heart New York with an anatomically correct heart.
No, it's not anatomically correct.
Ouch. Oh, ow. Oh.
It's a very old illustration from a very old anatomy book, and it's just at a glance, it's not correct at all.
Oh, boy. Ouch. Here's another
idea. It's in the ballpark.
All right, but that one didn't work, right?
Okay.
But
I know you want a liver, right?
No, that's a good idea, too. What sounds like love? Loaf. You get a loaf of bread. I loaf New York. What do you think?
It's pretty easy to go to I loathe New York.
Yeah.
Oh, ouch. I said loaf, not loathe. All right, let's see. This email from Mike in Saratoga. Hello, esteemed panel. I saw a video that was shared on social media. It had many different celebrities. Okay, I saw this one too, and I was going to bring it up, Mike. It had many different celebrities protesting a certain other celebrity. After a few seconds, I realized the whole thing was created by artificial intelligence. Saw this in the news today. Don't think many of the viewers would realize the images were AI-generated. Do these celebs have any recourse against the video makers? If I were one of the people portrayed in the video, I'd be worried about my reputation. If it's the one I'm thinking of, Mike, it is people, Jewish entertainers, who are basically showing Kanye West that he's number one by flipping him the bird. And it's all AI generated. Seinfeld is there.
I saw Scarlett Johansson.
And she's objecting to it
just
on AI grounds. So what do we do with that?
I think rights of publicity might have an effect there. I don't know.
I think so, yeah. Your right of publicity, reputational harm. All these laws, unfortunately, vary from state to state, but they'd be able to pick the state.
Right.
I think California would have the most.
Yeah, I would say California.
California would have.
New York's pretty strong, too. Actually, some of the other states have relatively strong.
Yeah. I think Indiana does. I think Arizona does.
Yeah, I was going to say Illinois, but I think it's Indiana.
I think Tennessee does.
Yeah.
I think they would have, some recourse.
It's amazing what AI can do, though. I mean, these photos looked, to me, they looked pretty good. I mean, they looked real.
But they're going to have to find who did it.
It was an Israeli AI. I mean, he's out there.
Okay.
The name is out there. So, an interesting story. It just, as I saw, it just broke today, but maybe I just missed it for a couple of days. The email here is voxpop@wamc.org. The number is 800-348-2551. It's the Copyright Forum with Bill Westwood, Polly Law, and Paul Rapp. This email from Krista. With the cost of goods and materials going up because of, let's see, let me make sure this is actually about the show and not a pitch here. Hang on. This is a pitch. All right, you know what, Krista, don't do that. you're not getting a call. Jim writes, because of the advancement in AI technology, it's now possible for a person to record anyone's voice, and with the help of AI, they can manipulate that voice to be used in commercials online or for anything. We've talked about this. Jim says, now that this is possible, how can voice actors or anybody else protect themselves, and how would they even know if some bad person out there hasn't already done this?
They're already suing. I have a good friend who's a voiceover person.
And who's his agent?
I don't know who her agent is.
Okay.
But she's down in New York City. She does a lot of remarkable things. And she and another group of voice actors are already suing a couple of different companies. They're very worried. They're very worried about that.
They should be.
Yeah.
But the genie's out of the bottle now. The technology's right?
It's been out of the bottle for a long time. Remember when there was a car commercial decades ago where someone imitated, who did Bette Davis' eyes?
Kim Carnes.
Someone imitated Kim Carnes' voice.
Wow, that's a weird stretch.
And she sued and she won.
Huh.
Yeah, Bette Midler won two, and Tom Waits has won six.
Oh yeah,
six
we've
or
heard
eight.
About that.
But those are people who are recognizable. A voiceover artist may not be recognizable right. to the
general public.
It's more commercial harm to them than any kind of, you know, Tom Waits endorsing some kind of potato chips.
You know.
So, you know, it's a tough one. If it turns out there's no recourse, it's going to be tough.
Well, wouldn't the penalties, assuming that the artists in question win, wouldn't the punitive penalties have to be vast in order to be a deterrent? Otherwise, people are just going to keep doing it.
Well, if they don't keep doing it, somebody else will.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's a flood. And so it's difficult. I mean, New York has that new law that. But that you have to be famous in order to take advantage of it. That a reconstituted version of yourself is now illegal under New York law and many states as well. But I think the bar is you have to be famous first.
And how do you, famous in one person's eyes is
exactly.
I mean, how do you? It's a subjective thing.
Well, it's the same way with the moral rights issue.
Yeah, or fair
New
rights.
York with, as you've experienced.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
As my old bass player, Cheese, said, it's not how famous you are. It's how famous people think you are.
Very interesting. You know, going back to Scarlett Johansson for a minute, one of the comments she made, and I don't have it in front of me, so I have to paraphrase, but part of what she objects to is that if we allow this to go, we have lost all grip on reality. And I really thought that was, it's so true. This is what AI is doing to us. Nothing is real anymore.
Right, right. It's scary.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, they could probably just AI us. We'd hang around, sit in the green room.
Nobody could AI you. Right.
That's right. There's not enough intelligence to artificial there. All right, let's go to Merle in Argyle. Merle, you're on.
Talk about famous people. Here I'm on.
Okay, buddy.
My question, I have a quick one, and then I'm going to have a real question.
Oh, wonderful.
How do you get to the patent office? I've been trying to check something out, and I keep getting Google.
USPTO.gov.
USPTO?
What is it?
USPTO, United States Patent and Trademark Office, .gov, G-O-V.
That's PTO.
USPTO.
.gov, G-O-V, .gov, buddy. USPTO. Don't do BTO because that's Bachman Turner Overdrive, and you don't want to.
All right. The question is: this has to do with a picture on a chapter. In other words, chapter 21 of the Harry Potter series, the last book. Anyway, with every chapter, there's a picture on the beginning of the chapter. Is that picture copyrighted?
Yes.
In other words, does Disney own that picture?
No, Disney does not own it. The publisher owns it because Mary Dupree signed away her rights, basically.
Dependent out of that?
No.
From a jeweler, would he be breaking copyright law?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right. That's what I... He thought he was, too.
Okay.
So,
did that stop him?
This is off the record. Nobody heard that.
10-4, good buddy. All right. Hey, Merle, we're going to take a break here, man. Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. Yes, it's exciting. It's the copyright forum. And, hey, Zachy, what do you think about a little... Zachy's nodding off. That's how exciting it is. How about a little music there, Daddy-O? We'll take an underwriting break, and then we'll come back and do other things. Let me ask the drummer here. You ever do a song in 13? That's a Triskaidekka by John Weber.
I've done similar stuff. I was in a band that played a lot of Don Ellis orchestra stuff. So it'd be 5-4-4-4, you know, 3-3. And it was insane. I mean, I couldn't read it because it was so complex. I had to listen enough times so that I just got it, you know.
Yeah, 13 is, that's a good one, man. 13-8, yeah, not bad. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's the Copyright Forum. Polly Law, Bill Westwood, Paul Rapp here to answer your questions. This is an email that came in to voxpop@wamc.org from Vincent in West Hurley. I produce a climate-related radio feature with accompanying website. Should I copyright or trademark? And if so, is it complicated and expensive? And that's from Vincent. A lot of size. What the heck?
I think you probably want to trademark the name of the show. If you want to trademark all of the content, I think it depends on the nature of the content. And it would be a lot of work. You could do it as a serial every 3 months or, you know, like that.
Copyright.gov.
Yeah, copyright.gov. You can read about it. Trademarks are relatively expensive. The filing fee is now $350 to submit, and then you have attorney's fees on top of that. If you hire an attorney, I've had some clients able to get trademarks themselves. I've had many more call me up after they tried and screwed it up.
Right.
Copyrights are less expensive, but it sounds like it would be time consuming to put together the applications. So, you know, if you feel like you want to protect it, and especially I think the trademark, because your name should be unique and you don't want to have anybody else using a similar name.
Okay.
You know, the content, I'd be a little less so unless you have something really unusual and something that's, you know, liable to go viral.
And if you did, you could either hire an attorney or there's something out there called Rights Click, which actually could help you with some of that.
Yeah.
Okay, that puts attorneys out of business. Are you sure you want to tell Rap?
Oh, no.
It is an attorney.
Oh, it is?
Isn't that David Newhoff?
Well, David's not an attorney, though. But, yeah, David is part owner
of
that.
Oh, he's great. He was on the show.
Yeah. No, David's good. Okay. No, but this, it just, they do a lot of the groundwork for you. So.
Okay. Number here is 800-348-2551, the Copyright Forum in progress. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Steve in Queensbury. Steve, you're on. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I have an idea, a phrase for a bumper sticker that I'm thinking about having it mass-produced, and it's a pretty catchy phrase. Is that something I should have copyrighted before it goes to print?
It's not copyrightable.
No phrase is?
No, short phrase.
Yeah, something short enough to be on a bumper sticker won't be.
Well, what about like the real thing? That was trademarked, right?
That's trademarked.
It's a trademark.
Big difference.
It's for Coca-Cola.
Right.
You know, it became known, it became associated with Coca-Cola. So you saw the real thing, you immediately thought of Coca-Cola.
Same way with the Nike thing.
Yeah.
Especially when they used the signature red type and
Yeah, you know, and a short phrase that doesn't refer to a good or a service is not going to be trademarkable either. So
is it a funny phrase, Steve?
Oh, okay. No, it's you know, it's one of those things where in today's times, you know, if I was to put this bumper sticker out, it makes a lot of sense, and it just tells people how to do the right thing, and it's kind of a catchy phrase, and I think it might go over, but you can't copyright that.
No, I mean, you could start a company with the name of that phrase.
And then
sell bumper stickers.
Okay. Yeah, it could even be a sole proprietorship.
Yeah. And that way you should be able to get a trademark for it because it's the name of the company.
Ah, genius. Well, that'll only cost you a couple of grand, okay. Steve. Enjoy. That sounds like a plan. Yeah.
No, sole proprietorship. I think you go to the county clerk
and do a DBA
And do you do a DBA, and it costs you, I don't remember what it cost me,
yeah,
20
but registering
bucks?
The trademark will cost them about
No, no, of course,
grand.
Of course.
Okay, all right. Well, Steve, I want to see one of these. If you make them, send one over here just so I can see what you're talking about.
I will.
Thanks,
okay.
Man. Appreciate the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's the Copyright Forum. And, okay, Harriet in Woodstock. Hello, Harriet in Woodstock.
Hi, Ray. Hi, Polly.
Hey, Hattie. How are you doing?
Actually, not really. Not so well. But I'm walking and talking. I have had recently the COVID virus.
Oh, ouch.
Not fun, but no. That's not why I'm calling. I'm not quite sure I can describe this properly, but very recently, Verizon, without any notification or anything, suddenly changed the whole format of the message, the way they set up their message boxes and everything. And I had to, for a few days, I thought my phone was out of order. And I finally called Verizon, and I got through to a person, and it turned out that I had to pick a new password, I had to do a new message, and that's why I'm calling, because I did my new message, which was very simple. You know, please leave a message, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Well, a few friends have called me and said, what's with your message? Verizon has chosen to use my voice to say, to leave two different messages.
Huh.
And I just thought, because it's what you were kind of talking about, I just thought I'd put that in and say, what about that?
Paul Rapp, what do you think?
I'm not thinking at the moment.
Harriet, did Verizon use AI to generate another message from you? What's up?
Well, I don't think there's another Harriet with my voice.
Interesting.
That's what I'm thinking they did. Without my permission.
Interesting.
They've said things like, one of the messages is, I'm busy right now. Well, I would never in a million years leave that as my message.
But it's your voice. It's your voice you're hearing.
Yes. Yeah.
When people call you?
Yeah.
I might want to talk to an attorney about that. I think it's sort of intriguing.
Well, I personally haven't gone to somebody else's phone or whatever to experience this, but two different people have told me that two different messages in my voice for my message box, which I never said and never would say.
Okay.
Can't you just go on and delete it?
That's a good idea.
What do you mean?
Change your message.
Back to what you want.
Have Polly do it for
you. I've tried to go through their program, but I haven't been able to.
Yikes. I think you've stumped the panel here, Harriet, except that maybe you want to be a touch base with an attorney and see what the attorney says.
Maybe I do. Taking on Verizon? I'm not so sure, but I do like it.
Okay.
I'll tell you that much.
Well, I think that before I let you go, just run it around here. Bill, any ideas?
No, other than talking to an attorney. I don't know.
Paul Rapp?
I don't think any attorney is going to be able to help you on this one.
Okay. Polly?
I'm gonna have to talk to somebody at Verizon.
Yeah, I think that's a good start.
Yeah. I would lodge a complaint with Verizon.
I would raise holy heck. I really would.
Okay. We'll do that. Harriet, I hope you're feeling better. Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's the Copyright Forum. Let's go to Poughkeepsie and see what happens. Andrew, you're on.
Yes, hello. Question, real quick.
Okay.
Liability, playing in a cover band in bars. You're playing other people's material. Is there any liability for that?
It's
no.
On the bar, right?
No. It's up to the bar to pay ASCAP and BMI and CSAC. The liability is not on the musicians. It's on the venue, period. You know, I mean, that's how it goes.
So, and if the bar is not aware of that, or they don't do that? Is that
that's their problem?
Yeah,
that's going to be their problem, and they will probably be made aware of it at some point.
Yes,
because ASCAP and BMI are and NCSAC are very, very aggressive about this.
Yep. All right. Hey, I think you'll be okay. Enjoy the set. Thank you, Andrew. Appreciate the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's the copyright form. Kay writes in, Catherine writes in, my college roommate made a Valentine card in 1965 with the image of a functioning heart. You see? Great minds. There we are. Let's go to Susan in Kingston. Susan, you're on.
Hi. I guess I have an idea or a suggestion for the gentleman who has the bumper sticker idea.
Splendid.
He could put together a little magazine, like 5 or 6 pages, with the title either of his bumper sticker phrase or just bumper stickers, and put different phrases in the book, and then he can copyright that and get an ISBN number.
There you go.
Hey, does that work? Does that pass muster?
Yes, it does.
Paul Rapp?
Yeah, if she's got a number of them, then, you know, you can it'll pass the threshold.
Genius.
Of minimal.
Okay, great idea, Susan. You want to be on the show?
Sure, why not? I've done this before with a little magazine I put together for kids called Rag Soup.
Ah,
nice.
Thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. Getting back to the last thing about cover bands, and then getting back to the AI appropriating famous people. Say I'm an Elvis impersonator, and I'm making money as an Elvis impersonator. Do I have to be sanctioned and licensed by Elvis's estate?
No, they actually started suing Elvis impersonators when Elvis impersonators started in the 70s and 80s. They have since backed off because they realized it's really not in their interest to say no. And I mean, there's tribute bands all over the place now. I mean, more than ever. And they're all fine. You know, occasionally one will say that they're endorsed by the but they don't all say that because all of them aren't, you know.
What about a Joey Bishop impersonator?
Joey Bishop?
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's go back to the phone. Leary and Hudson. Leary, you're on.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Welcome.
Thank you. So I wrote a piece of music. It was for French horn and piano for a music festival in Texas some years back. And I want to publish the music for it. Some people who heard it want the music for it, and they want to play it themselves. But, you know, it was a piece I poured my heart and soul into, and I don't want anyone stealing my music. So I wonder if I should copyright it before publishing the score.
You should register
score.
It, yes.
It's already copyrighted. It's copyrighted when you create it, but now you want to go to www.copyright.gov and register it by all means.
Yeah, anything that you publish and put out in the world that you want to protect, like this, you want to register the copyright.
Okay. All right, Leary, you good with that? Go ahead. You can follow up.
I'm wondering, in cases where I do register it, and then I do hear someone who, you know, had a similar idea, how likely am I to, win a case if I...
Good question.
When you say similar idea, that makes it very murky because...
It's a derivative, perhaps.
Perhaps. But just having a combination of, you said, a piano and a French horn, that's not actionable.
But if it's the same thing, it's highly actionable.
If they're copying your work.
You have to prove that they copied your work, that they heard your work and copied it. If they independently created it, you don't have a case. But I'd recommend registering it because with a registered copyright, when you go after them, with an angry lawyer letter, you've got, a lot of ammunition. You know, you've got a lot of heft.
Okay. All right, Leary, hey, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Richard and Dalton. Richard, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call, obviously. My question is, I have a trademark now, and it has a logo, and when it was registered, it had the name of the company underneath. But quite often I use it with the name of the company next to it. Is that an issue?
No. I mean, when you go to renew it, you're going to have to show them the same configuration that you initially registered. You're not in trouble by moving the elements around, because if someone stole it, they'd still be infringing on your original registration. So
would it be a good idea for him to do a style sheet with the variations of the arrangement of the elements?
Those would all be different applications, so that would get real expensive. You can't do that like you can with copyright. You do one, and it has to be exact to the specimens you show them, that you show it's in use. But yeah, moving the elements around is not a problem. I have a lot of clients everybody does that a lot. You might use the name alone, you might use the logo alone, and you might rearrange them. And that's all fine.
Okay, Richard.
Okay. Yeah, that's very helpful, because, yeah, in some places it's next to the logo, some places it's underneath.
Yeah,
so,
that's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Well, thank you very much for the call. Let's quickly go now to Matthew in Lenox. Matthew, you're on.
Hi. I have a question about derivative works.
Okay.
I would like to adapt and ideally copyright something which has fallen into the public domain. This is from a film, but the film is adapted from a novel, which is still under copyright. Am I free to do that, or are there issues?
You say the film has fallen into the public domain?
The film has fallen into the public domain. Yeah.
When was it produced?
It was produced in the 40s.
So they didn't renew it. So that's why it's in the public
domain.
They didn't renew it
in one of these little studios, fell apart.
Yeah, and you
lost.
It's a derivative work of the novel, and if you did a derivative work of the derivative work, it would also be...
Mm-hmm.
A derivative work of the novel.
I'm sorry. Say the secret way.
That?
All right,
but
Matthew.
Would it be protectable?
It would be infringing.
His protectable work would be infringing.
Yeah.
I mean, his derivative work would be infringing.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I was trying to get at.
Yeah.
We're really ending the show in a very confusing way.
Derivative and a derivative of the derivative.
All right, Matthew, you want to follow up here? We have about 12 seconds before my brain explodes. What do you got?
No, I don't think I can. I think I would need more than 12
okay.
seconds to come
all
up
right.
with a follow-up.
We're going
to
let it explode on its own then. Thanks
good
a lot.
We do that to Ray. We do that to Ray.
Yeah, you sure do, and nicely done. All right, Polly Law, your big art show, the Collected Light and Exploration,
yes.
Scotland, Ireland, the Hudson Valley. When and where?
Albert Shahinian Fine Art in Rhinebeck, New York, and it's on now until the end of June.
And you're going to do an
weekend
artist talk when?
April 6th.
Okay, this is
with
exciting.
The other two artists.
And how do people find out about that?
You can go online to Albert Shahinian Fine Art, and it's right there
Okay. Spend 20 minutes figuring out how to spell Shahinian, and then you'll be all set. Bill Westwood, how do people find out about your shtick?
They go to westwoodmedical.com.
And Paul Rapp, if people want to contact you.
My email is paul@paulrapp.com.
You guys, thank you so much. Fun show. Appreciate it very much. We'll do it again soon. Support comes from The Gift Garden, Main Street, Bennington, Vermont. Florist and gift shop now accepting orders for Valentine's Day. TheGiftGardenVT.com. At the Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond. Skidmore.edu/Tang. Thanks again to Bill Westwood, Polly Law, and Paul Rapp for being here today. Thank you for calling. Thanks for the emails. Sorry if we didn't get to your question. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Andrea Leon screened the calls. Thank you, Andrea. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow. Oh, this is perfect for the snowstorm and the ice storm. It's the gardening show. We'll see you at 2 p.m.